B'shus, the entire Hanhala, the Rosh Hashiva, Mashkichim. What I want to try to speak about is very, very off the beaten path. I've had the schus of speaking in many, many yeshivas, and I've noticed that me giving a drasha about Yom Kippur is a total waste of time for two reasons. One, there are going to be 17 other drashas about Yom Kippur. God knows you're not going to listen to a word I have to say, and it's not going to help you at all, because everyone else said this and everyone else said that. So one more opinion is not going to make a difference. Number two, the reason why it's a total waste of time is all of the things that you've heard your entire life until now, and all the things you're going to continue to hear, believe it or not, this is the lesson I learned from your wonderful Rabbi Stryker. When it's actually in the time of the moment, it's almost impossible to produce. I was standing there at my vort, and Rabbi Stryker came over to me. He's like, a lot of people are going to give you advice how to be a good husband. You ready for this one? Good luck. That's what Rabbi Stryker said to me. And that was the best advice I got of everyone. Because when I'm going to sit there, I got into a fight with my wife. Oh no, my Rabbi said I can't get a fight with my wife. No, I want to anger you. I want to scream at her right now. Give me a break. Are you telling me I can't scream at my wife? Right? But no, he said, good luck. Don't scream at your wife right now. What's wrong with you? Lemaitza, so for me to sit there and start telling you how fantastic Yom Kippur is, I personally hold, maybe the Rebbeinu Shalom feels differently about it. Lightning will come down and strike me. That Lemaitza, it's a total waste of time. So what I'm going to try to do is give you a little bit of advice. I had tremendous, tremendous Yom Kippurs in my lifetime. I did not grow up like this. I didn't look like this. Most of my Yom Kippurs did not feel like this. For me, Yom Kippur was a great experience if I was able to sleep through from the beginning all the way till the end. And I've learned over the years to be able to find a little bit, a tiny taste of what Yom Kippur could actually accomplish for an individual. So I want to give you three eitzes. It's very easy. Strike one, strike two, strike three. If you don't get these three, sorry, buddy, you got to start Yom Kippur all over again. The first eitzah goes like this. Everyone knows. Everyone. If anyone has anything to do with sports, or if anyone has to do with anything, the greatest part of every single game is not the game, it's the highlights. No one has any interest whatsoever in watching all those extra 600 pitches that were thrown that no one cares about. The balls and the strikes, you want to care if he was struck out or if he hit a home run. Maybe it was a bunt. Highlights. More than that, every single time he walks back and forth, he throws it again. I'm a huge baseball fan. When I was growing up, I was living in Atlanta. Every playoff game, every World Series game, I sat in the first row, my friend, whatever. We paid a bunch of people off over the years. Every single sporting event, I was there. But Lemaisa, even if I went to a game, there was no shayla about it. Highlights. You go to a basketball game, this guy passed this way, they don't care about that. Everyone was waiting to see Michael Jordan jump from the foul line and dunk. Kacha, that was it. You watch that highlight 20 times, super slow motion, again he's going to dunk. If a Jew would take one moment and realize what the highlights of his day actually are, it will change his entire experience. If you even think in your mind before the day even starts, is this a moment that I actually want to hold on to? You'll make the moment real. Yom Kippur is very different. Somebody said it to me so beautifully. Ohad said it so beautifully. Rosh Hashanah is 2 days, but if you take the Yom Kippur Machzer and you put it next to the Rosh Hashanah Machzer, for some reason Yom Kippur of one day is bigger than 2 days of davening. So you sit there and you count through the pages of the Machzer and you're like, okay, 736 more left. So right, Olavsky always made this joke, okay, English, Hebrew. But Kitzer, it's a long time of davening. So I'm going to sit there and remember what I did and what I didn't do. Listen very carefully. If you want to have a good Eitzah to be able to make Yom Kippur real for you, before Yom Kippur even starts, imagine in your mind, when the moment of Yom Kippur hits me, I want to remember it. This year I had one of these moments. I was standing there during Tekiyah Shofar, and my Rebbe was shaking and shaking and shaking and shaking. You have to understand, he's a tremendous makubal, a very old Rav, his name is Rav Abish Eisen, shaking like it was the charado of Maimed HaSinai. And as he said, Tekiyah, my heart became completely rested. But when they got to Truah, I was standing there listening, and I was looking at my Rav the whole time when he was standing there looking at this. You have to understand how the Rav is. Like this, with the kavanas, you know, it was all kavanas, Arizal and Rashash by heart. All of a sudden, without me doing anything, I just started crying. I have no idea why. I have a book, a sefer, called Mishnas Mo'adim, whatever, one of these ones from Oz V'Hadar that I keep with me every single time in davening. And I write down every year moments that hit me either on Rosh Hashanah, and then I have a separate one for Yom Kippur, that hit me on Yom Kippur. And I go over it over the years. This is what I felt 5 years ago. Oh, this part of davening, when I read it, I broke down crying. Why? Because I finally felt like I needed the Beis HaMikdash. This part of davening, I felt there was someone who didn't have children for many years, and I'm close to them, and I was davening, started crying, write it down. because it was a moment that I connected to him. It was different than all the other experiences that I had. I wasn't just standing there in shul, one of the guys, Vayavor! That's beautiful, it's wonderful. It's amazing to make sure that all of our voices get louder than the guy next to us. But for me to be able to attach to a moment where I was actually able to feel the emotion of the day and be able to look back 2 years later, 5 years later, 10 years later and experience that moment again, there was 1 year where I told myself, Yom Kippur is going to be devoted to davening to people who don't have children. I look back to the notes that I had from that year, and I say to myself, my heart opened up in ways it never opened up before, because I learned how to feel for someone else besides myself. Yom Kippur became real. It wasn't just a judgment of, okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I know I did a lot of things wrong, and I need to change things around. It's beautiful. It's a great idea. In theory, it's wonderful for me to daven like that. But am I going to hold on to any of it? Is it going to change me as a person? If I can remember the memories and the moments where I actually got hit by something, I will hold on to that for the rest of my life. And I sit down after Yom Kippur, either right before I go eat or right after I go eat, and I write it down. And I hold on to it. And I make it real for me. If I know I'm going to be doing that, before Yom Kippur even starts, I will already make sure that I recognize this could be a moment that's special for me. Kol Midre could be real. Ne'ilah could have something different than it did have the year beforehand. Because I'm waiting for the highlights. I'm waiting for something to actually happen. Not just the day will go. I'm going to be involved in the day. And automatically, because I'll be involved in the day, something different will happen that didn't happen beforehand. That's the first Eitzah. It's an Eitzah that if you do the right way, your life will be changed forever. For Rosh Hashanah, for Yom Kippur, I have one for Tisha B'Av. I sit there at the end, and my son, he always makes fun of me, whatever. Everyone goes home to go eat. I sit down and I start writing, Motzei Tisha B'Av. What are my Kabbalahs? What am I going to accept upon myself from now until Rosh Chodesh Elul? Because Tisha B'Av was such an amazing event for me. There's so much closeness that I got to the Ribbono Shel Olam that because I was in the day and I felt it and I realized and I saw this year, Tisha B'Av, I paced back and forth for 30 minutes, 1:45 in the morning. You know why? Because I said to myself, how could it be that the Shekhinah is not where it's supposed to be and he still loves us so much? The Ribbono Shel Olam is waiting for us to be able to build the Beis HaMikdash. He's waiting for us to do it. It's in our hands. We can do it. And you know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu still does? Even though we didn't get there yet? Do you know he still loves us? And I'm going to tell you a little bit of a secret. If you look carefully in Yom Kippur davening, you know after everyone says this whole thing, Ma'arekayen, there's a little tefillah where we say, Rachmanis, you know we didn't get to the Beis HaMikdash yet? Everyone says it very softly. Do yourselves a favor. Take out an English machzor when you get to this point, when you read about it, and feel the words. All the things that we're talking about that happened in the Beis HaMikdash, it's unbelievable. It's amazing. According to many in the Mefarshim, it even has higher levels of Kedusha than certain parts of Ne'ilah. Because we're going, Lifnai Ulifnim, the Kodesh HaGadoshim is happening in actuality when the Kohen Gadol was actually went in, when the Shas is going to stand here reading the words, you are going to be in the Kodesh HaGadoshim. You could never do that in the Beis HaMikdash. But because we're in Galus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does us a favor, and he says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put all of you inside the Kodesh HaGadoshim. Not just the Kohen Gadol. And if you read the words, you're in the Kodesh HaGadoshim. Do you know how powerful that moment could be for you? Everyone just thinks, oh, Avodas Kohen Gadol, oh, the Shat says it really quickly. You're in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That is a memory, that is a highlight that you only get once a year. So the Eitzah that I'm offering you, Eitzah number one, is do yourselves a favor. Start thinking about what could possibly hit you on Yom Kippur. And the second, if you already know that you had moments on Rosh Hashanah that hit you, sit down with a machzor that hopefully you own it, and write in the memories that you have from Rosh Hashanah. This inspired me. This song touched my heart. When I was talking to someone about this vart, I heard it. It would mamish made a tremendous reshim on me. Sit down with your machzor from Rosh Hashanah and write already what you felt during Rosh Hashanah. Because you know what's going to happen? Tishrei is going to go, and then we're going to get to Chanukah, and you're not even going to remember that there was ever in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. It's going to be goodbye. And Rav Volbo used to tell over that the Yidden in Mir Yeshiva in Poland that actually felt Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, they were still humming the Nigunim of Rosh Hashanah that they sang in Yeshiva all the way right until Pesach time. Because it was still in their hearts. They held on to it. You will not hold on to any of it. I'm telling you personally. I'm not just speaking to you. I'm speaking to myself. If you do not make sure that you understand the highlights, it will go, gone. Just like everything else in life that has its time, it will be one of those memories that you look back and be like, oh yeah, sick times, man. This is Rosh Hashanah we're talking about. You have a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. There's no sick times. There's a connection that's being created. And if a person doesn't recognize the connection, gone. The next thing you need to know is, on Yom Kippur, you're a rock star. The Sefer Yetzirah, I'm sorry, I don't know, hopefully the Rosh Giyachim Yeshivas won't be upset that I'm saying Devir Kabbalah. The Sefer Yetzirah brings down that there's a certain type of malach. This malach is very miyuchad. Very miyuchad. You know what its existence is? It has a tremendous desire to be close to Hashem. It's very strange. So this malach, I'm not going to say the name because we don't say the names of strange malachim. Right when it gets an opportunity, it looks for the opening and it shoots itself up all the way as close as it can to get to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And as it gets closer and closer, it knows exactly what it's doing. It's strange because malachim only listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's desire, right? That means Hashem created this malach with this yediyah to teach us the lesson I'm about to tell you right now. It gets closer and closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and we know, Rabbi Isai, nothing can get close to the Ribbono Shel Olam and live. And it's, it gets so close, boom, burnt up, gone. Can you imagine? It's almost like spiritual suicide. Because it knows that the second that it gets all the way up to the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's dead, it's done, finished. But it's programmed to only do what Hashem tells it to do. And this malach knows that all it wants to do is get close to Hashem. A yid on Yom Kippur is that malach. Don't hold yourself back. You're a rock star. The ability that you have on Yom Kippur, don't ever look back on it. The ability that you have to be able to accomplish is like this malach. You can get all the way up to Shemayim. You may even get burnt from it. Don't stop. Just keep on going. The biggest nisayon the Yidden faced when they were standing by Kriyas Yamsuf, believe it or not, was not to go into the water. Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, when the Yidden were standing by Kriyas Yamsuf, their biggest nisayon was, how am I going to live tomorrow like I live today? Could you imagine such a nisayon? Here you are. You just walk out of Egypt, and now you're standing in front of the water. A biggest miracle in the world is going to happen if you actually walk through this water. But you know what the fear is? Not what's going to happen to me if I walk through the water. If I don't walk through the water, I'm dead! So what's the fear? What were they afraid to go into? You ready for this? Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. Their fear was, I can't do this tomorrow. How could I possibly walk through the water tomorrow? You want me every single day of my life to be perfect? To rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu on that level where nothing is going to hold me back from believing that every single thing in this world is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Do you really have such high expectations for me? Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, that lesson that the Yidden were giving over when we're standing by Kriyas Yamsuf is the lesson that every Yid needs to know for his whole entire life. You know what the lesson is? Stop thinking so much about it! Be a tzaddik today. Be like that malach. Don't put on shoes. Stand all day. Don't eat. Very little sleep. Daven all day. No existence. I don't even have any human connection. Don't go near your wives. You know why? Because today you're that malach. You're going to shoot all the way up to the sky. You're going to be a rock star. You get burnt in the middle? Shh. Stop talking about it. You're fasting today. Oh, who says I'll be able to fast tomorrow? Shh. It's none of your business what you're doing tomorrow. Today you're a tzaddik in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam. No cheshbonos. And unfortunately, says the Yisod V'Shar Shavoda, we get so caught up in how many hours are left in the fast. You know what's going to end up happening? You really think you're going to go eat? I'm not talking to Avos Chaim, guys. The Avos Chaim guys are in Suffolk, whether or not they're going to go eat in the middle. You have no idea what some of the tshuvas that I've had to ask Rebbeim about what to do about feeding guys on Yom Kippur. Maisa Shahaya, I'm telling you, you can't imagine some of the stories I have. I have given people food on Yom Kippur from my hands. Mamish. I was told by Rebbeim, Psak Halacha, how to do it, what to do. I'm not worried about that here. So all you guys are going to be sitting here, Baruch Hashem, during Yom Kippur davening, and all of a sudden you're going to start looking at the clock, and you can sit there and say, oh, only 6 hours left in the fast. You know what you should be thinking about? Hareini mekabel al atzmi, write these words down and keep them with you, and every single time you get hungry, think about them. Hareini mekabel al atzmi mitzvas inui. Every single time a person thinks he's hungry, think to himself, I'm accepting upon myself the mitzvas asay that today I'm supposed to hold myself back from food. Inui doesn't always necessarily mean suffering. Doesn't always mean suffering. Inui means to refrain. The Hashem tells me refrain. Refrain from washing your hands. Refrain from sleeping with your wife. Refrain from wearing leather. Refrain. All the refrains. I'm accepting upon myself that this hunger right now is inui. I have to refrain. The Torah told me to do it. You imagine, says Yisod V'Shor Shavoda, the schar a person gets, every single time he's hungry, he doesn't say, oh, only 6 hours left. He sits there and says to himself, I'm accepting upon myself this hunger because Hashem is telling me to do it. It's a different Yom Kippur. You don't look and wait for the time to be over. You sit there and say, every second is special. Every single second. So the second answer that I'm offering you is, be that angel. One day. Everyone always talks to us about how we're supposed to be angels on Yom Kippur. We keep our feet together. We stand all day. We need a hezbon, such a thing. What type of angel do they want me to be? I'm still living here in this world. The answer is from the Sefer Yetzirah. The angel that it wants me to be is someone that will shoot all the way up to the sky. I will not hold back anything. Every level of spirituality, every davening that I have, I'm going to put my heart into everything. Even if I collapse after Yom Kippur is over, so be it. Doesn't make a difference. You know why? Who cares what I feel tomorrow? Today, this is the way I stand in front of Hashem. Again, the first Eitzah is learn how to live the highlights. Keep your minds exactly in place. Maybe this is a moment. Maybe this is special. Maybe this part of Tefillah speaks to me. Maybe this part of Tefillah speaks to me. Maybe this lesson that I learned, seeing someone else daven, believe it or not, sometimes can be an amazing thing. I one time saw a guy who was not keeping Yom Kippur at all come down for Ne'ilah, and he stood in the back of the shul. And he didn't say a word. I walked over to him, showed him the place. He goes, Rabbi, my job right now is to be in the room. I gave him a huge hug. I said to him, I don't know if all the shmuzim and all the Sifrei Musa that I've ever learned in my life have taught me the lesson that you just taught me. A person needs to know exactly where they're holding. His job, he was 100% right. It's just to be in the room. He didn't even know, he didn't want to call it a base medrash. My job is to be in the room. Each person has to measure for themselves, what's my job right now? And my highlights, my feelings, my connection to Yom Kippur will be based on how I can define that. Number two, don't hold back. Be that rock star, be the angel. Be the person that's able to come all the way up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nothing's holding me back. Now, Eitzah number three is probably the most difficult one you'll work on in your life, but it's something that you need to be able to hear, and hopefully you'll be able to accomplish it. Why is it so unbelievable? The Rebbe Shalom loves me. I've said this many hundreds of thousands of times. I saw this chumash in front of me. I said, do I have to use this? I opened up to a random page. It's absolutely amazing. I looked at the chumash. Vayidaber Hashem l'Moshe lemar, v'asisa kir nechoshes v'kana nechoshes. How the Rebbe Shalom could do such wondrous things for us is almost, it's a plea atzuma. What am I going to speak about? One of the greatest kings in Jewish history, who unfortunately is looked at as one of the most terrible kings in Jewish history, was someone named Menashe. Menashe, it's very difficult to be able to discuss Menashe. We see from even the times of the Tanaim and the Meraim, they didn't understand Menashe. We're talking about a person who he personally placed in Avodah Zarah in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Heichal. And yet we talk about Menashe in the worst possible fashion. And you see, when the Tanaim and Amorim, the Gemara Maseches Avodah Zarah, there's a hint to it in Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin also, when all of a sudden they said, how could you have done those things? He says back to them, what do you mean? You would have picked up your coat and you would have ran to go do the Avodah Zarah. And we talk about a Menashe, Mamash, this bad and that bad, this bad and that bad. The Yerushalmi and Sanhedrin talks about Menashe in a very, very different way. Menashe was Chayev Misa. From who? Not from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but from the king. The king of Bavel wanted Menashe dead. So you know what he said he should do with him? You know where he should put him? In a mulir nechoshes. Vasisa kir nechoshes. That's what we opened up to. They ordered, you know what we should do? We should put him in a huge vat that was made specifically out of copper. And you know what we're going to do to kill him? We're not going to just give him a regular death. We're going to make a fire underneath the vat. And we're going to kill him like that. That's a befitting way. If we want to make the king of the Jews torture and suffer till no end, you take copper, which gets super, super, super hot, 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 hot. Make a fire underneath, and you know what's going to happen to his body? He'll just start melting, right? There's no other way. He won't die from the fire. The heat will start melting his legs, and it'll be a slow death and painful. Best way to kill someone. So they go and they put him inside this massive, this is the way the Yerushalmi brings it down. What can I tell you? He goes and he put him inside this copper. That's why when I saw Vasitya Kir Nechoshes, I said to myself, okay, I got to speak about it if that's the best. I had no plans on saying anything, by the way, when I walked in. I look at the yeshiva, and we talk according to what the yeshiva's feelings are. We're working together. It's not me. I'm not speaking. We're working together to make Yom Kippur real. And they put him inside this massive vat, this copper pot, and they light the fire underneath him. And he says to himself, oh, what do I do whenever I get stuck in a situation? I start doing Avodah Zarah. So he starts worshiping all of the Avodah Zarah that he knows. He starts bowing down to this one. Didn't work. Next one. Next one. Nothing's working. He remembers, you know, my great-great-grandfather, David HaMelech, said that whenever you're in a really, really difficult matzav, it can end up coming out that if you daven to Hashem, He'll save you. If I daven to Hashem and He saves me, so then I'll go back to the ways of Judaism. But if He doesn't save me, then I'm going to die anyway. And all of a sudden He starts davening. And He stands there davening to Hashem. And all of a sudden the Malachi Ashares start taking His tefillas. And they start bringing it up to Hashem. And now the other Malachim are getting very angry. Whoa. This guy didn't do tshuva yet. How could you possibly go along and let his tefillahs up? And the Yerushalmi says there was a vikuach. And the angels scream, don't you dare let those tefillahs up! How could you possibly let that in? Look what he did. He brought Avodah Zarah to the Heichal. The Jews are going to be destroyed because of him. And you want to go let his tefillahs go up? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers back to them something that is needed for every single Jewish person in their lifetime. The Rebbe Shalom says, if I hold this back, then it's not real. Tshuva is not real. You're not accepted under all circumstances. And the Malachim are doing whatever they can to stop these tefillahs. They're making walls, they're making fights, they're saying, there's no way we want it going in. Rebbeinu Shalom, how could you possibly let this happen? And Rebbeinu Shalom takes the tefillos, it's unbelievable, and he makes a chatira, he makes a little tiny line, mitachas kisei hakavod. Now, what goes on underneath the kisei hakavod? You know what's there, Rabbi Say? You ever read Shir HaShirim Erev Shabbos? All of a sudden, after Shir HaShirim Erev Shabbos, there's this amazing, amazing tefillah, which I heard from a tremendous Rav one time, a big mekubal. Even if you don't have time to say the Shir HaShirim Erev Shabbos, just say the Yi Ratzon afterwards. And in that Yi Ratzon, it says an amazing lashon. It says, HaMakom SheHaNeshamos Nechtzavos Misham. A place where the neshamos are etched out of. Nechtzav literally means to etch out. Beautiful concept. Says the Normally Melech. Why is the Kosh Baruch have to etch out a neshama? Hashem goes, takes his hand, pulls out a neshama, and puts it into this world. Etching out means that every single chisel is done specifically the way that Rebbeinu Shalom wants this person to be. Your neshama needs to be etched out so that you could accomplish exactly what you're supposed to. Your neshama, exactly how you're supposed to. My neshama, they can only be done that way if the Rebbeinu Shalom etches every single neshama out. Because you'll never see two that are exactly the same. The same way if you look, I try to be able to see every single thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts in this world to be able to learn a lesson. If you look at Jerusalem stone, believe it or not, the outside of Jerusalem stone is also etched out. No two stones are the same. Go ahead, look. There are hundreds of thousands, if not millions of Jerusalem stones out of every single building in this entire city. And you'll go look at one, and you'll put your hand on it, and you'll put your hand on the other one, and see if it's the exact same way. None of them are etched the same. Because when you etch something, it's etched specifically for those details. So the place where your neshama comes from has to be a makom sheh neshamas nechtzavas misham. You know where that is? Tachas kisei hakavod. Only Hashem gets involved in these things. Angels, they have no business in souls. They can't get involved in them. Your soul can't come to the world through an angel. Only from Hashem. No other place. So all of a sudden, what does the Kadosh Baruch Hu do? He makes a chatira, and makes a little tiny line underneath the place of the Kisei HaKavod where all the neshamas come, and he takes that tefillah that Menashe is in the middle of davening when he's inside this huge mulier that's nechoshes and he's about to die, and he sneaks it in and he accepts it, says the Ber Moshe. You probably never heard of the Ber Moshe before. Why? In the world, I didn't even know who the Ber Moshe was until somebody showed me a service. Someone named Ozhirav from Bnei Brak, he was originally from a town in Europe called Ozhirav. He says such an unbelievable pshat, he brings so many riots for it. What could have he done already? What did Menashe do that was so magnificent? What tefillah, or what soul did he teach us that there's nothing in the world that can be held back, that it had to go all the way up to the makom? You ready for this? He cried. The soul of all tshuva, says the Ber Moshe, is the ability to cry. Now that's why I said one of the most difficult tasks you work on in your life is being able to accomplish this. Tears, the Zohar explains to us, they don't always come out. Not only do they not always come out, they're not maskim. You ever got to the point where I think I'm going to cry and then I hold myself back? You know why? Because in order for me to be able to cry from my neshama, every single fiber in my body needs to be maskim. From my toenails, to the hairs on my legs, to my hairs on my nose, they all, if it's going to be real, it's going to come out be'emes, his whole body has to be maskim to it. Why? Because the Gemara tells us, Maseches Brachos, it's a very clear raya. Where is my neshama? It's everywhere. It's like going along and taking a glass blower and blowing into a piece of glass. Every single place where the wind goes, the glass opens up. So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes along and blows the neshama inside of us, every place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu blows inside of us, goes straight into my nose, has to be filled with my neshama. So if the hairs in my legs are not maskim, that I should be able to cry this tear right now, you know what's going to happen? I'll hold myself back because I'm not ready to do it yet. What Menashe was able to teach us is that when a person is able to get to the deepest part of his soul, where it doesn't make any sense he should be able to find it, nothing, not even the Malachi Asharis, can stand in the way of that tshuva being taken in. And you know, he tried his best, Menashe, after he got out of the situation, to be able to undo what he did wrong. But Lamaisa, man makes mistakes. And he wasn't able to undo it completely. He tried, but Lamaisa, the Roshan was too strong, and Klai Yisrael continued to fall until, Rachman, as we know, there was a Churban HaBayis. And now, who do we pin it on? We sit there in all the tefillos and all the slichos, and we still talk about it, unfortunately, Menashe going along and putting, but he tried to do tshuva. And Hashem accepted that tshuva. And you know what? He got saved. Now, the Yerushalmi doesn't go into how he's being saved. I want to tie you know why it doesn't go into it? Because it's not important. It's not important. I had a Maisa, we'll take the tone down a little bit. About 3 or 4 years ago, they have this amazing zip line where you travel, where you go. It's the longest zip line in Eretz in Yerushalayim, Eretz Yisrael, Middle East, whatever it is. I decided I was going to video it myself on the zip line because I wanted to send it to someone in America. This person has a care, whatever. So I'm sitting there. I take my video. I'm like, I'm holding on to it. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go through. It's going to be amazing. They say you go 40, 50 miles an hour on the zip line. I'm going straight through. Oh, we get there. Okay, oh, ready, get ready. The guy didn't catch me. And I went in and I went out. And I'm looking down and I take the camera. I'm like, this could only happen to me. This only, and I put it down and I see birds flying underneath me. I was like, that's a problem when the birds are underneath you. Here you are, you're dangling 500 feet in the air, harness, it was 90 degrees outside, and I'm in the middle of nowhere. And what do I do now? And I scream out, is there a plan? Like, does this happen? The guy screams back, you're the fourth! I'm like, how long has the thing been here for? 15 years! Do you know how to get me down? No! No one's ever gotten that far out before! Aha. So they call me. I'm like, you gotta be kidding, right? Like, you have a plan. It's like, nope. Everyone else just went a little bit out. You... The guy didn't catch you, so you went in full speed and you went out full speed. I'm like, so you're going to just leave me here? Is there like a way? Can you send someone else? He's like, we'll make a cheshbon. If you send someone else going 40 miles an hour and he slams into you, you're dead. I'm like, oh, so what are we doing? We don't know yet. Okay. So I'm sitting there dangling with my feet in the air. And I all of a sudden, who calls me? My Rebbe. Reb Meishe, ata yichol lulmod ayom? Ani bederech lechevron. What am I going to tell the Rav? I can't really get to the car right now. Oh, I can't. Kivri tzadikim. Titpalel alai. I'm like, Efshar shay Rav titpalel al gamkin. Maybe the Rav should daven for me also. Lemaisa. Had they get me down? Who cares? Who cares? It wasn't as glorious as being dangling there for a half hour. I'm telling you right now. The glorious part was me taking the next video to be like, it's 23 minutes. Now I lost all feeling in my legs. I made a big mistake. At one point, I was like, you know what? I'm Rambo. I'm going to get out of this. So I climb up to the thing, and I put my hand on one side and hand on the other. Right away, I made the decision. Don't touch the harness. I don't loosen it. I don't tighten it. Nothing goes in. The harness stays. This is my lifeline right here. We don't touch the harness. I don't care how much it hurts me. If all feeling can be lost in my legs, you don't touch harness. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to climb across. So I climb all the way up. The guys are screaming and chanting, Rabbi, Rabbi. And so I wasn't thinking, obviously. I pulled my hand over here, and I put the hand over here. Now, physics only makes sense that if you're weighing your entire thing on, like all of a sudden the wheel that's going to be here is going to slam into your hand. Now, miracle of all miracles, the metal of the wheel hit me on the outside and it didn't chop my fingers off. I wasn't thinking straight. I had to go from the back, which was impossible because I couldn't hold my body like this and then move in the other way. But Lemaisa, why is it that the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Yerushalmi doesn't tell us how he got out? Because it's not important. What's important is to teach us how to cry. The important lesson of me dangling up there, I was able to sit and think a lot about life when I was up there. A lot of lessons in life, I was able to sit and do 30 minutes of cheshbon and nefesh. There's a reason why the Rebbe Shalom wants me to be up here right now. The third lesson that we need to learn, Rabbi Sai, is how to cry. How do I get there? Stop making so many cheshbonis. I have to learn how to let it all go. I will only learn how to cry for my neshama if I let it go. I can't think about whether or not, is the guy next to me going to realize I'm crying? Is the Rosh Yeshiva going to be looking my way and all of a sudden he's going to come over to me after the davening and be like, so, I saw you had a really good Yom Kippur. I saw you were really crying. That was really special. Let it all go. Because you can't allow your neshama to actually let the tear out if you have cheshbonos. So Menashe is teaching us one of the most important lessons we'll ever learn in life. A tear has to be pure. Like the Zohar says, every part of my body, every fiber needs to agree for it to happen. So we have three etzahs to be able to give us a Yom Kippur. The first etzah is, like we said, highlights. Remember them. Live them. Pay attention to them. Be in the moment. Ask myself, is this something that I would want to write down and make sure that I remember 20 years from now? Is this the way that I feel? Did this niggun touch my heart? Did I say things the way I really wanted to? Did I daven with extra kavana that I was hoping I would get to? Try to remember the highlights immediately after Yom Kippur. Sit down and write them down. Number two, be that angel. Be the rock star. You can reach Shamayim, Rabbi Yisrael. I'm telling you what you could accomplish on Yom Kippur. You'll never be able to accomplish ever again in your life. But you can't do it with cheshbonos. The Yidden taught us when we were standing by Kriyas Yamsuf, who cares what you're going to do tomorrow? You don't have to be this person tomorrow. You just have to be this person today. No other time. And number three, learn how to cry. from the bottom of your heart. Let it all go. Whatever needs to come out, let your body feel it, let your neshama feel it, let your neshama come out, and allow the tear to come out so the sweetest of moments will be able to be lived. Rabbi Isai, the tears on Yom Kippur are not bitter, they're sweet. They're sweet. If you're able to allow yourself to bring you to an understanding that a tear on Yom Kippur is special, it's sweet. I'm not suffering right now. I'm getting closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam in a way I've never been able to get to beforehand. It will be a Yom Kippur that you'll remember for the rest of your life. Okay? Thank you for listening.